Okay, so I want to start this time. I guess we're going to somewhat continue last time. But I guess maybe a little bit, try to get it a little bit more practical. Okay? Try to work towards a little more practical, theoretical. I mean, there's a lot of facets to this discussion, and we kind of have to see where it goes. But let's start with Pasuk Mishlei. Okay? So, Pasuk says it's Pasuk, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Okay? Mozne Mirma Tovas Hashem Ve'Evin Shlema Ritzono. So it means Mozne Mirma, deceitful scales. Okay, deceitful scales, I guess it means crooked, you know, you mess around with the scales. Scales, to weigh things, right? Tovas Hashem is a Toeva. It's an abomination, whatever Toeva, you know, translate Toeva however you want, but it's a Tovas Hashem. Ve'Evin Shlema Ritzono. And a complete rock, right? Rocks are also used part of the measuring devices, right? They get a rock that weighs exactly whatever it is. And you use that to weigh on the scale against something else. So, Ritzono. Evan Shlema Ritzono. And a complete rock is his Ritzon, is God's will. Okay, that's the pasuk. Okay? So, again, deceitful scales is Toeva, Toeva Sasham. And a correct rock, right? A whole rock is God's will. Okay, so it seems like somehow Tovas Hashem and Ritzono are somehow being used as opposites, something to that effect. And I guess, you know, corrupt scales and, you know, good rocks seem to be somewhat opposites, right? Okay. So fine. So, any question? Question? Hey, Alan.
Yeah, I have a question. I mean, I don't really know much about Mishlei, but from what I do know, it's a practical book, not a philosophy book. It seems like an odd consideration to find in a book of what God wants. I mean, that's atypical for this.
Okay. Sounds good.
I guess the general question is going to be, you know, what's so, like, abominable about the scale, the deceitful scales, because that just seems like one way of stealing. It seems like stealing is the main...
Okay.
Thing. So, you know, is there something particularly like
abhorrent
about
skills? Okay, good. Okay. Anyone else? Any other questions? So, I have an interesting question is that this actually is a paraphrase of a pasuk in the Torah. Okay? Which is a question, I think. Right? I mean, Mishlei, I presumably the job isn't just to repeat the Torah. It's actually the Torah. So it turns out, with regarding weights, there's two places where the Torah talks about weights. In Kedoshim and in Kiseitze. Okay, one of them, there's two lavim. There's, I think, one mitzvah saseh of having, not mitzvah saseh of having good weights, but there's two lo saseh. One is lo sasu avel v'mishpat. Don't do corruption in judgment. V'mida mishkol v'mesorah. Fine, Mosne said that, kind of, whatever, you should have these proper weights. Don't do corruption. Don't trick people when you're weighing stuff, and that's an eser. So one of the law and one of the Tariq Mitzvahs is not to trick people in your measurements, in your weights. Avel, corruption, right? That's understandable. Fine. Doesn't say anything about Toeva or anything. Okay, fine. Then, in Kiseitze, it comes at it again, and it says, Lo yeh b'kid l'cha b'kizcha evan v'aven g'dol l'ktana. So you shouldn't have, like, different size weights. Lo yeh l'cha b'kizcha efa g'dol l'ktana. Shouldn't have, whatever, different types of measurements. Evan shlema tzedek yelach, efa shlema tzedek yelach. So you should have proper weights. L'man yarichu yamech al adama asher shon kecha nosenach. So you'll have a long, you, Kal Yisrael, will have long life on this land, the Eretz Yisrael. Ki so'avas Hashem alokecha kol osei ela kol osei afech. So because it's to'avas Hashem, anyone who does these things, anyone who does deceit. Okay? So what's the to'avas Hashem? What's this? So what's the law here?
Having it.
Lo yelecha b'kischa. Having it. The Rambam says in the Koseres, even if you don't use it, having it. What does it mean having it? So the way the Rambam points is this, like to be masha it, to retain it, keep it in your house, right? That's technically what you do, having it. Someone throws it in your house, it's not, if you know about it and you have it, you retain it. You don't get rid of it, that's the law. Okay? But that's what it's talking about. So when it says, Kisova Sashana Kecha Kolisaila, maybe say kolose avel is someone who does it, who uses them, corruption. But kolose ela, who does these things, what's talking about is having these rocks, right? And this parsha in Kisitz is adding the law of owning these things, okay? And in Kedoshim was the other law, which is using them, corrupting, doing corruption, tricking people. So you have two laws, And the one where it says Toeva is by the having it. Okay? And the pasuk says, Ki Tova Asher Mekel Kol Seila. And then Mishlei says, Not Moses name Mirma Tova Asher Hashem. The Evan Shlema Ritzono. So Moses Mirma Tova Asher Hashem, that's a pasuk. Right? It's talking about.
When you use them,
it says, don't. Lo Sasu Avim Bamishpat, Bamida, Bamishkel, Bamisora, don't do these corruptions. Mosnit said that Avnit said that Efa said that Kin said that Yelachem Ani Hashem Alkechem Asher Tesi Eschem Eretz Yisrael Shmartem Es Kol Chukosai Vas Kamashvatai Vas Sizem Osam Ani Hashem. Doesn't really talk that much. Doesn't really rip into you for doing it. It just kind of says it like any other law.
So you're saying that the pasuk in Mishlei seems to be referring to
Seems to be having them. Yeah, because it doesn't say using them. It says, I think, Mosne Mirma Tovas Hashem, the object itself.
Right.
I mean, what...
It seems to be the Pasuk anyway, but this...
Yeah, there's support, right. But I'm saying so that's a Pasuk. So that part of the Pasuk is already in the Torah. And then, Ve'evan Shlema Ritzono, I mean, the Torah doesn't actually use the word Ritzono, but, I mean, presumably it's a mitzvah in the Torah. That means it's God's will. Right? I mean, it doesn't say, this is God's will, have a good rock, but, I mean, it says, have a good rock. So... It just doesn't seem to be. I mean, I don't think Mishlei just is repeating, telling us over some of the Targum Mitzvos, or just repeating, paraphrasing Pesukim of the Torah. And what's the point of this? And also, I think it's interesting to note. This is alluding to this, but why is the Toeva on the having it? Shouldn't the Toeva be on the using it, on the tricking? You think it's like a gather or something like that? I think the Rambam says that maybe someone will come to use it. If you have it, you'll come to use it, but. Having it, it seems to be not really the Toeva. The Toeva should be the tricking. Right?
Where are Mishlei's this again?
Yud Aleph Aleph. So, that's my question. Questions? I looked around at the Mepharshim, but I don't think I saw anyone who specifically...
Do you have any on here? Because I think he says that same question in terms of, like, this is exactly the same as the Torah. Like,
really?
Yeah.
I don't. Right. Do you? No. That's it. I'm interested. Yeah, I'm interested in it. I don't know. I didn't look at it.
I mean, before you can ask the question, I think, of why the Toeva is attached to what it is, just what's the problem with having it? I mean, outside of Gether.
Okay.
What's wrong with that?
Okay. Why outside of Gether, or just whatever?
Well, I'm saying if it's only a Gether, then it seems impossible to
have Okay, attached. Fine.
But, and it's also funny, like, why is the Torah making the Gether a Daraisa?
That's interesting.
Sometimes Torah does that.
Yeah, I know.
It's like a funny thing whenever you find it.
Yep.
So it seems like there should be some intrinsic element here. Mm-hmm. Well, what is it? Because it doesn't seem like you're doing anything wrong by owning these things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I know exactly why this puts in the category of like Toyota, but it does seem like these things are objects themselves that express like falsehood.
Right. I hear you. Okay. Any other thoughts?
And the only thought I'm having is about what's bad about the Mosne Mirma, but not having it. I mean, just in terms of that type of thing, is the fact that, like, if you're going to go steal something from somebody, then you have to do an action of stealing. You know, but this is something that you basically acquire the scales, or you mess up your scales one time, and then it is like this automated stealing thing, which allows you to bypass the guilt, allows you to do more. Like,
That's interesting.
But and it is like trying to say it is via the object, like it's intrinsically a tool of theft as opposed to
That's a good point. Now, let me ask you another question. I don't know. Maybe you guys can help me with this. I don't know if this is a fair question, but is there... Like, it could have said, Mosne Mirma Tovas Hashem, Mosne Tzedek Ritzono. Right, like it could have went from scales to rocks. Mm-hmm. Now, is that like, just to giving a different example, because it would sound funny to use the same word again, or is that a fair question? Like, why doesn't it say a corrupt rock is a toiva and a good rock is whatever, or is it just a stylistic thing, or is there an answer to that?
The Malbim says that everything like that is specific and like that's a legitimate question, and it seems like almost everyone else says it's just a poetic thing or just a stylistic thing that's not going to use the same word twice.
Oh yeah? Almost everyone else. Like,
I'm
for
pretty
instance?
Sure, yeah. Like Mitzvus David always says kapel
hamavim,
or like the Miri says like whenever you have a pasuk that ascribes one quality to one thing and another quality to another thing, usually it means like they're interchangeable. Yeah.
Okay. Because I kind of had the question, I didn't pursue it that much because I don't believe in the question enough to think that long about it. You know, you just can't force yourself to think about something that long unless you really buy it. But I don't know, I was kind of curious.
We were laughing because anytime anyone asks a question like that in Ryan Moskowitz's class, he always said, like, the Malbim is into that kind of question. Like, and that's his response. Like, you know, like never, like,
so
like, he doesn't, like, no, that was a Malbim thing.
Yeah, so he doesn't pursue that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Just because I was wondering if you guys were going to kind of give me a problem with my shot because I'm not going to explain that. Not you. Or maybe the other guys. Just talk to them. Do you have a tape of that? The Malva.
Every tape.
Okay. So I'll tell you what I'm thinking. Okay. So I'm thinking that it's really pointing to an important, I guess, point in, I guess you could say, avoiding chait. Okay? Avoiding chait. And it's like, I don't know so much, and again, you can tell me if you think this is not true about Mishlei, but the way I'm interpreting this is he's not really teaching you a Chiddush, per se. It's in the Torah, but he's like underlining it, and he's applying it to Mishlei. He's like, he's incorporating it into the study of Mishlei, which is like ethics, Moser, something like that. It's not just, you know, Hilchos of, you know, Gzela, Hilchos Kaneva, but he's using it to bring out a point, an important point. He's saying, is notice, the Torah calls this to Avas Hashem, and Evan Shlema, this is, underline this is important. Look into this, there's an idea here. Okay? How so? Yeah. So the example which comes to my mind, which I think just reminds me of the idea best, is forgetting about the weights for a second, is the Isser of Yichud. Okay? The Isser of Yichud. And the importance of the Isser of Yichud and the practical wisdom in this, Tishna Yichud. And the idea is that I think I can't remember where I was. I don't know, I forgot to look it up. But the Rambam right calls Yichud the Gorei Magadol. Am I right? Yeah. Do you know what it is? It's probably somewhere there.
Mishnah Torah.
Yeah. So it's the Gorei Magadol. It means it's the great causer. The great causer of Arayos, of Bia. And the idea is that if a person gets into a situation of Yichud and then just says, well, don't worry, I'm not going to do anything. I'll control myself. That doesn't really work. Usually, like, it's possible. You know, Yosef HaTzadik did it. You know, or, I mean, I assume there's Yichud there. But in general, like, that is not the time to control yourself. Okay? Because the emotions are so strong at that moment. And they're so aroused that even, that takes a massive feat of self-control to be able to, for a person to control himself in the heat of the moment. Okay? And it could be in the sexual area. It's a good example because, you know, you could see that. But in any area, it could be in, could be in cheating people. Could be if you're in a job and you have a job that's kind of like a little bit shady kind of a job, and you get into a situation where basically you got to decide: are you going to be involved in this cheating thing, or are you going to tell your boss no? You know, like that's kind of the heat of the moment. It's not exactly the time to be able to control yourself. So the time to fight battles, is before you get into the situation. Okay, before, that's what Yichud. Yichud says, don't close that door. Don't get in. And it's Aser. That's also an Isser. But before you get into the situation, yeah, you have the motion, but it hasn't gone into full gear. You still have the chance of being able to control yourself. Okay? You still have the chance. But it's hard. Because the reason why it's hard and why the challenge is because you don't feel that guilty about Yichud. You don't feel that guilty about buying a bad weight. Because what are you doing? You're not doing anything. You're just going in a room. Whatever. We're just hanging out. or I'm just buying the weight. I don't know. I just, whatever. I'm just buying it. You know? There's no, your guilt doesn't attach to that. Your guilt attaches to ripping the guy off or to sleeping with the girl or whatever it is. This is like the guilt, it's like a, it's kind of guilt-free at that point, or very little guilt at that point. The guilt sets in when the moment, but then already it's, the taiva is so strong that the guilt is only, you know, often powerless to be able to stop you. So the battle to be fought in general is in the forethought, is before the emotion that takes full strength, in avoiding the situation, in thinking, how could I set up a situation which won't lead me to chet, which will be conducive to proper actions and won't be conducive to negative actions. That's the time to decide. And if a person, and it could be that's what it's saying, is that the toeva is in getting the way. I mean, of course, cheating a person is toeva. I don't think it means the exclusion. I mean, if you use the way, of course, you're also. But it's the Torah is underlining the fact that it's tovas Hashem, even just getting it, because that's basically, it's a siyag. It's going to lead you to the thing. And it is going to lead you to the thing. But it's when a person has them, he's going to end up using them. Oh, not 100%, but basically, he's already made the move in that direction, and he's lost the battle. Because that was the battle. That's the battleground. The battleground is before you get there. Before you get there. And what is the action of perfection? Getting the good rock. Evan Shlema is the Ritzono. Like, and of course, if you have the corrupt rock and you don't use it, that's great. That's great self-control, and that's awesome if you could do that. But the time to fight the battle, and it could be that's what Mishle is underscoring, don't look at the thing as just a technical siyag. Technical fence and whatever, and you learn the halachas, you can see that. But the Tovas Hashem and the Ritzono, this is where it's at. Time to fight your battles is not at the moment. Not at the moment when you got to make your decision. It's beforehand. It's setting up the proper situation that you'll be in the right place, in the right mindset to be able to make good decisions. You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's, I think, a very, you know, I think it has applicability in any area. I mean, Yichud, for instance, for one, is, you know, certainly the great example, which, you know, it's the strongest type of, and it's something we have to be intelligent about. But it could be in getting, you know, this thing, I think this is getting, oh, I think a good example, by the way, why, maybe the, someone asked me this question, why is the example not Yichud? Like, it's not just the one that came to my mind, but like, why is this example better? So I think, like, see, Yichud itself is kind of, is Asur, first of all, and I'm not saying that it's Asur, but it's like you're already doing, so you're already involved in the crime, you know, so to speak. You're involved with the girl. And getting the rock is kind of like, what are you, you're not even doing anything. You just have it. It's like, the Isser is to keep it. It's not even to buy it. It's just, you know, it's like almost passive. You just, the Isser is with your mashed in your house. You know, so it's really like a guilt-free kind of a thing. It's just having it, keeping it. You know, it's, and it kind of, it's easy to just ignore. I'm not really doing anything. You know what I mean?
What do you mean that it's, that it's not, it's more than a technical thing, and that the battleground is really that? I mean, really the battleground is after the yichud already happened, or after you already have the weight, just for saying that it's going to be a losing, we're pretty sure it's going to be a losing battle. Like, if it was right, easy to control that emotion, then maybe it would be different.
So no, but I'm saying is that since it's basically high probability of a losing battle, then you don't fight that battle. You don't get into that battle. The battle is before you get there. That's when if a person's a chacham, the chacham ain't a brosha. You have to be long-sighted. You can't get into that battle. You're going to lose that battle, and it's foolish to allow yourself to get into that situation. So the intelligent battleground is not getting into yichud.
Right.
So yeah, if you do get there, then yeah, I guess that's another battleground. But smart, you know, in a war, you don't go to fight into that situation, which, you know, the odds are all stacked against you.
But is there anything inherently wrong with buying the weights or with the yichud, or is it just because we recognize that, you know, it's going to be a losing battle?
Well, yes, but not just. I mean, that's an important just. That's intelligence. That's called. That's not ultimate. I'm saying it's not intrinsically. Intrinsically, there's nothing wrong with having it. If it would be impossible to use it, or if somehow you know. I mean, it is because you're moving in that direction. I mean, you could go in that route. It's because you're moving in that direction. But I'm not saying that. There's a different way to go. It's like you're emotionally moving yourself in that direction. But I'm saying is, in terms of the real wrong is the bia and is the using the weight. But that's the saying is that That's wrong. You got to be intelligent about making decisions. So that's making a bad decision. Getting in the weight is a bad decision, and that's wrong. That is wrong because you're not thinking about it in your nature and about where your, you know, where your emotions are and your ability to control yourself. So that itself is wrong. But it's not wrong like as an end, but it's wrong in terms of as a decision. It's wrong.
I mean, the guy who gets into the Yichud situation thinking that he's going to be able to control himself, like, yeah, he may or may not partake of the action and then get the consequences of that, but that reflects a whole skewed way of him viewing
right.
himself and his own
right.
capacity for decision-making and self-control and
right.
blindness to his emotion, you know.
Correct. Correct. Right, exactly. Right, and that's what I'm saying Mishle is underscoring. I mean, the Torah, vis-a-vis the Torah, it might be just a siyach, sort of just a siyach, because the ultimately what's wrong is the doing it, you know? But in so far as Mishle is concerned, it's telling you advice, practical advice about how to live life properly and how not to get burned. If you want to not get burned, don't have that weight. That's the bad decision. That's the corruption. You'll end up using it probably. But yeah, even if you don't, it just shows you're not making proper decisions. Anyway.
So what exactly is a
Toyeva? See, I don't know exactly what Toyeva means. But I'm taking it for now as just being the opposite of Ritzona. It's like a strong, it's very bad, because it's basically you're going in the, it's the decision to go on the path of Rishus and the path of corruption. So that's what's Toyeva. As opposed to Ritzona, the decision to go on the path of Tzidkus and of Mishpat. So it's you're deciding to go on that path. You know what I mean? And it's the first step, which you're basically putting yourself on a route where you're basically going there.
So it's like saying, really,
the
whole path is
Toyeva,
but even just...
Yeah, that's right. It's even this. It's like, that's right. It's not saying this is Toyeva, but using it now, that's no big deal. It's the Toyeva begins here. It begins here. Of course that's Toyeva. But the Torah is being ma'aser you about mm-hmm. using a strong word at that point, because your emotions don't feel like it's Toyeva. Emotionally, you feel like, yeah, whatever. I won't use it. I know myself. And maybe you do know yourself now, but you don't know yourself then once that emotion is aroused. That's the problem. And that's part of the problem, I guess, with the yichud or whatever, is the you of this moment wouldn't sleep with you. You wouldn't. You'd feel too guilty. You couldn't do it. But the you who's in the yichud situation is a you who have a much more intense emotion to sleep with them. That you is going to do it, and your guilt isn't going to stand up against that. So it's like you kind of think now, before you get into that situation, you project your feeling and your decision making of then on, you know, of now onto that. You just feel like, yeah, I won't go. I wouldn't do that. You know, but the problem is you become a different person once you get there. You know, and once you're in the situation, whatever it is, you're there. It's not the time to make that decision. You're a different person. Your whole decision making, you know, framework has changed based upon the emotions which become aroused. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so back to last week's share. Okay, so Toros Lekava. So one point I wanted to clarify, and then I think my hook here, connection, is that I think in so far, but I'm going to go, I'll tell you the hook, but then I want to go back to a point from last week. But the point is that presumably we're talking to us, like we're in situations where we were looking to set up Toros Lekava in some form or other. And I think, you know, everyone is, you know, we're probably the group, I'm sure we're all at different levels and different feelings about where we are, where we want to be and whatever. So I'm kind of, you know, I think this could apply to every person. There's no person who doesn't have, room to grow in the area. But the idea is like, in order for a person to make learning a part of, to go towards, the idea is how do we practically go towards where we're at, towards Torah Slakava, towards this ideal, where we're really, you know, devoted to Torah as the main part of our life. Okay. And I think that one thing is that we gotta make a plan. We can't just wait around till we're just kind of sitting around and saying, oh, I want to learn. You're not going to do it then. It's not the way to make a decision. Just like when you're in the Yichud situation, you're not going to control yourself. The time is now. The time is before you're sitting around doing nothing, saying, I feel like I want to learn and not able to learn. The time is, you got to make a plan. You got to, you know, think into the situation, think into our lives, think into where we're at, and try to somehow figure out, are we going where we want to be going? And if not, then what's wrong and how could we go about fixing this? You know what I mean? So it takes forethought before the situation, just to kind of sit around, you know, just to go on autopilot and just plan to you know, make decisions on the fly, kind of doesn't work. Okay, you kind of usually end up going the wrong way in the decision making, and a person can never learn. It can wake up in 5 years from now and realize that, listen, I haven't really learned. I don't know how to learn. I'm going out to work. I can't learn. I don't know how to do it. It's not Torah Lekeva. You kind of have forethought to make Torah Lekeva. You got to learn. Primarily, you got to learn how to learn. You got to learn how to learn. You got to learn how to enjoy learning. You got to be attracted to Torah in a certain type of way. So it takes, you know, it takes a plan. And I think that's what we have to kind of move towards. From kind of last week, we were kind of building a theoretical framework about setting up a goal. You know, what the Torah holds should be a person's goal towards a relationship towards Torah. But there's questions: how do we go from there? And I'm not really sure. I'm hoping, you know, we'll go through different points, different. I think it involves different aspects. I think it involves certain philosophical points. I think it involves certain psychological points, certain practical ideas. You know, it's like it's a multifaceted task. But I think it's an important one. So one thing I just wanted to clear up, just because I saw from some guys who are asking me, is that Torah Lekeva does not mean that you're learning all day long. Okay, it doesn't mean, and that's I think the point is like it doesn't mean learning is the only thing you're doing is learning, and I'm always thinking that's it, because that's not true. And that's why I think last week doing the two parts of the Rambam is we're not doing that. I mean, this issue, we're not doing Kolel guy learning all day long. I mean, look, some guys may, and that's great. I'm not saying, you know, if a guy has the ability to support himself and all that, you know. But in general, I don't mean that we should be setting up our lives, that that's all we're doing, and everything else, you know, we're living on bread and water and whatever. But there's an idea with Torah Lekeva is what is your goal? What is your keva? What is the ikar, and what is the tafel? So it means you can have a job. Okay, it means you have a job, and you work 9 to 5, or whatever the hours are, you know, whatever it is. But the idea is that what are you going for? What are you working for? What is your what makes you tick? What's behind it all? Are you learning to feel okay? But essentially, you're looking for a job, for money, and for ambition, and for family, and for sports, and for whatever it is. Or are you essentially going for Torah? But look, the money and the job and all that stuff is a practice and means towards being able to get it. So I think it's like they're not. It's not mutually exclusive to get a job and to make a good living and to support your family and all that and to have Torah Lekeva. Okay, it doesn't mean that you have to give up everything and basically just throw away, you know, no one's doing that, and I'm not saying that's what we should be doing. But at the same time, I think it's a matter of priorities. What is our goal? Okay, so we need a job, but ultimately we need to learn. We need to have Torah being a part of our lives. And again, it's not going to happen. I mean, even though it's not about the amount of time, but it is about the amount of time at a certain point. I don't think you could just kind of make Torah Lekeva by learning an hour a day from the time you're a kid all the way until you grow up. You got to at some point learn, first of all, learn how to learn and learn to appreciate learning. I mean, it takes time and involvement and energy to really... And even if it's possible, the level that you could reach and the appreciation you can have of Torah, and the more you'll be attached to the idea of Torah Lekeva, comes through really being gone at Torah. So the question is what's the obstacles? What obstacles do we have in attaining this goal? Assuming you hear the idea of Torah Lekeva, assuming you heard what we were talking about last week, and that's kind of, you know, something you kind of appreciate. And assuming you understand, first of all, not just that it's in fact what the Torah holds, but in fact that you're convinced that that's what you want to be, Kevin. Yeah, is Torah, and that's, I think, that learning, proof of learning, shir is important, is you have to think into, is Torah something that you do want to have, Kevin? But assuming that it is, it's easier said than done. Assuming we could see intellectually that that's kind of what we want, but somehow we're not able to do it, for some reason, right? And what gets in the way of doing it? So, I mean, Matt mentioned last time there's two kinds of things that get in the way. One is a different keva, which is like job, college. Okay, some guys are just putting all day long into college. I don't know if any of these guys, you guys or whatever, I don't really know, or into a job or into whatever. That's one type of a thing, is, you know, which, look, it's important to get a job and all that. But at the same time, a person has, if Torah's like keva, look, I mean, every person has their own situations. You have to know, you know, some people need a, you know, I don't know. But I'm saying, in theory, if Torah's Lekeva, then it should be manifest somehow. A person can't just be putting all their time into the perfect job and to pursuing all their energy to the job, and then kind of totally goes by the wayside. It has to be nicker in your actions that Torah will kept. So that's like one type of an issue, which I think we were kind of talking about last time. Parnasa, Malacha is that right? But the point is that there's another type of problem nowadays, which is kind of just wasting time, right? Internet, texting, movies, TV, Facebook, whatever. I don't know, whatever the things are, right? Just kind of wasting time, just sitting around doing nothing, right? Right? Is there anything else I'm missing from the list? Twitter, I don't know, whatever the, you know? I don't know, I'm kind of a few years behind, you know? But that kind of thing, which is that a person could not devote their proper energy to learning because they're busy doing work, and they're busy, you know, whatever, making money, or, you know, studying for school all day long. Or a person could just not devote proper time to learning because they're just sitting around doing nothing. You know, so even though we could appreciate learning, we could appreciate Torah, and we realize that we want to make Torah Slakeva, somehow we just can't get off of the chair or off of the whatever it is and just start learning, right? Somehow, even though we could see the point, there's somehow resistances, and I think we should understand this, right? Because it seems to be like a common problem. I don't think not only in Torah, I think in the world at large. I mean, it's like, you know, I've heard teachers around, they're just complaining that kids nowadays, they can't learn, they can't focus, they're always, and I see my class in college, you know, kids are every second, the second there's like an ounce of like something hard, they start texting, you know? But it's just like kind of the way, it's kind of like, I guess, a modern problem. Like, I don't know. I'm never that happy saying things are modern problems because, you know, like Kohelas, you know, but maybe it's a modern problem. But whatever it is, it's a problem which exists in modern times, so we have to talk about it. But maybe it's new. Could be like the, well, we said we have to talk about it, but whatever it is, it doesn't really matter when the problem came about. I was kind of thinking if there's anything like in Chazal. So it'd be nice to be able to find Chazals who talk about it, and what would be the analog of it back in the era and days of Chazal, you know, then you can kind of get some insight into it from Chazal. But, you know, if it really is a modern problem, then I don't know if we're going to get any help. Yes?
Before we go into this, into this part of the discussion,
yes.
When you're talking about before that Kevin doesn't mean that you're learning all day.
Right.
And that is more into what makes you tick. So what does it matter then what you're quantitatively how much learning you do? Like if it seems like a person could still his life could still be focused around Torah, you know, even if he only has a little bit of time to learn each day, if that's what he really appreciates.
Right.
So why are we talking in terms of scheduling?
Oh, well, first of all, I think the problem is that in order to have Torah Slakeva, I mean, at least for now, I don't think a person really, like, just on the most basic level, is if you don't know how to learn, you're not going to have Torah Slakeva. You're not going to be able to go, like, let's say you kind of don't learn how to learn in your years in yeshiva. You don't really know how to learn on your own. Okay, so, but you go to shir, and you hear good svaras and shiras and stuff, you know, and all that stuff, and you appreciate it, and you love it, and all that, okay? Now fast forward, and you come home from work at 7, 8 o'clock, or whatever it is, and now you're just kind of tired, and now Torah Slakeva, and I love Torah, and I love those svaras that I used to hear in shir, but now what do you do? So, like, where's your Torah? Like, it just, you get drawn into your world, and if you don't, you have to stay in Torah, and you have to kind of have a strong foothold in Torah, and the ability to learn Torah, and the ability to learn Torah on your own. You don't have your luxuries, which you have now, being able to roll down out of bed and to shir or whatever, and to hear a Rebbe giving, you have to kind of learn how to learn on your own. So maybe at that point, you know, assuming that you've gotten it in yeshiva, in your years in yeshiva, and you really appreciate learning, and you know how to learn to a certain degree independently. Yeah, there are various levels of independently. But you have the ability, you've gotten a strong enough foothold in Torah so that you're able to really to carry that with you through your life. You know, but if you don't do that, it's just not a practical thing to say, that's the essence of my life. You might be able to convince yourself that that's true when you're in yeshiva, because you kind of, what else do? You just kind of sit around and do nothing, and the only thing you really do is learning Torah. So yeah, that's my gava, you know, but it's just not a real life solution, because it's just not going to work. When you get a job and you actually have priorities and things to do, you're just not going to be able to learn. just on a practical level, it just, you have to learn, there's skills and appreciation of Torah. I think there's a certain type of an appreciation you have to have that's going to get you to do it after a long day of work. You're just going to have to really, you know, you could go into getting yourself to learn now, but it's not that easy when, you know, your wife and your kids and your job, and I mean, it's just hard, and you really gotta, you know. Also, I think if you really Torah Slakeva, I think you have to be motivated to be doing it. Like, if you have to ask if Torah Slakeva, why you only learning for an hour. Like, if that's really, you know, like, maybe you have problems, and like, every different people have different things and their energies and whatever, but in general, if this is really your essence and what really you value as the ikkar of life, so then wouldn't it be natural that you'd be putting in a decent amount of time into the thing? So, like I'd say, if it really is your ikkar, but you're spending more time watching TV than you're doing than you're learning or something like that, it kind of makes you wonder. Maybe it's not really. You may like be convinced of the idea conceptually, and it sounds nice, but is it really your ikkar? It's not just a matter of being able to check off a box. It has to really be. It has to act. It has to, you know. You have to live Torah. There's a way. It doesn't. Yeah, my point is that if you have a job, there are practical realities of the world. You have to make a living, and making a living means you have to get a job. And sometimes jobs that will actually feed your family may mean that you're not going to get home until seven o'clock at night, you know, whatever. So you're not going to be able to. You just can't. What are you going to do? So you're not going to be able to learn that many hours a day. So it's not a matter of hours, but if you get home at 4 o'clock and you're just sitting and watching TV for 4 or 5 hours and then you kind of decide to learn for an hour, that's not really Torah Slakeva, you know? But so when you have, but there, when something is forcing you not to be able to learn, so then, look, I have to live. I have to support my family. But on nights I'm learning and on weekends I'm learning, and that's because that's really what I'm doing it for. I'm doing it for, well, I have money because I have to support my family and I have to be able to live a life, but ultimately it's because what really matters is my Torah. So it's gotta, you know, I would just be skeptical of someone who's claiming Torah Slakeva but yet is really, you know, wasting a lot of time on other stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, like, shouldn't the focus of how to practically accomplish this be in, like, if what you're saying is that how the person lives is going to manifest how important this idea is to him.
Right.
So then, shouldn't the approach be to just work on getting the idea clear to you, and then if it's clear to you, then it will naturally manifest itself this way? Like, it kind of seems like it's just treating the symptoms. If we're just talking about how to schedule your time better, you know.
Well, I'm not saying I schedule time better. I'm not. I don't plan on really just having a practical, you know, schedule or taking out a schedule here. But I think the point is, you may understand an idea, but then you have resistances or reasons why the idea, even though you may get the concept, but there are problems. Some reason, even though you could hear the idea, there's problems with it. Somehow it doesn't, you know. I mean, look, we could try to go over the idea again, but I think there, if we see that. If we heard the idea last week and still it didn't really make an impact on us, maybe there are emotional, psychological problems that we have to address that are preventing us from being able to implement it. You know what I mean? So I think we should think about that. Why aren't we? If we do see the idea, look at, yeah, there's a lot of roots. That's the problem. It's like, so I wasn't sure exactly what to do here, because there's a lot of ways to go here, a lot of different routes of trying to, you know, go into this, you know, and I'm kind of just taking one, and we kind of see different weeks, we do different things, and, you know, I don't know, but, you know, I know, that's why I was kind of confused, you know, throughout the week, I was thinking about what I'm exactly going to do shit on this week, and I kind of figured that whatever I land on today, I just do, but then I took out a pen and paper, and I started writing things down, and I don't know, I kind of have some sort of sketch of where, you know. So this is the basic question I want to pursue today, okay? Is that if we see the idea, look, if we don't see the idea, for sure, if we don't see the idea, then it's not going to do anything. But if we do see the idea, and that's what hopefully the proof of learning and, you know, whatever, all the, you know, that stuff. If we see the idea, why, what's stopping us? Why do we just sit around and not learn? Right? Why aren't we, and I think it's important, I think that first point I mentioned is important. Especially for yeshiva guys, because we're at a stage where I just think it's, well, you're not going to be able to do it if you don't learn how. Like, it's just not easy to learn, you know. And there are guys, I'm sure there are tons of guys who are older and say they wish, I wish I would have really learned how to learn when I was a kid, but I can't do it now. You can't. In a certain sense, you can't. In a certain sense, you could. In a certain, you know, like, a guy could just stop his life and just take off and whatever and learn how to learn, but it's not going to, it's practically almost never happens, you know? So this is the time where you could do it. So you got, I think you have to appreciate that point, is that we're at times in our lives, and again, we're not all at the same stage of our lives, but this is where this is still all in a ballpark of, like, we're younger and we don't have families and tons of, you know, tons of kids. And so, like, I don't know, different people, you know, everyone has to know their own situation. But the idea is, like, we're in our younger years where we still could determine our path. You know, we still determine our path. And part of the Torah's Lekev, I think, has to involve a certain amount of a mastery and or an ability to learn independently. I think independent learning is very important. Because again, you don't have shears when you grow up. It just—it's almost not there. I mean, you come home from work and like, you don't have shears scheduled around your exact, you know, around your exact.
When
life.
You say independent, are you excluding chorusal learning?
No, I'm not excluding that at all. No, I mean, I think essentially, and that's one when we get taught about it. I think definitely you have to learn how to learn on the chorusal. I mean, you have to be able to learn. Shears great, but you got to learn how to sit down with the chorusal and work through it again. You know, that's what you're going to be able to do when you grow up. Okay, if you don't know how to do that, all you know how to do is listen to shir and give good svaras. Even if you give good svaras in shir, you're just not. If you can't sit down for an hour or two with the chavrusa, with the gemara, go through the gemara, get the pshat, set up some problems, think about them a little bit. You don't have to come up with the world shattering svaras or whatever, but you got to at least be able to do that activity, because that's the activity that you're going to be doing if you want learning to be a part of your life when you grow up and when you go to work. That's just what you're going to do. You're not going to be, you know, good just like there are some shears here and there, but I think you got to learn how to do that. How to just sit with Rav Rusa and learn through a sugya on any level. It doesn't mean you're going to be giving the same svaras as Rav Pesach's giving or whatever. But at least that we probably, a lot of guys can't do that. Because how, you can't. If you don't put it, you can't, it takes hard work to be able to do that. It's not easy to do that. And it takes a lot of hard work to learn how to do it. But if you could do that, then you could always do that. And it's awesome. And you could just have fun. You just come home at night and you can just sit down and learn. If you can't do that, then you're just frustrated, because what are you going to do? You may feel like you want to learn, but what are you going to do exactly? How many tapes could you listen to? How many articles could you read? Like, learning is about learning. It's just sitting down on, you know, again, I'm not saying there's nothing else in learning, but there's so much in Torah if you know how to learn it. Just know how to read a Gemara. Even if you have to use an art scroll to just get the pshat of the thing, but just know how to analyze the Gemara, just how to set up problems, how to think about it. So, you know, that's where it's at. That's where it's, you could really, it's limitless in your life. If you just acquire that skill, then you have the rest of your life to be able to just do that whenever you have free time, or, you know, at night after you come home from a hard day at work, on Shabbos, on Sunday, on whatever. If you never acquire that skill, then you could kind of, what are you going to, like, how, it's just not that practical to learn if you don't know how to do that. What are you going to do exactly? I mean, you could do things, but I think you're frustrated and you kind of feel like, you know, you kind of, and that's why there's so many people, I think, you know, you go to Daf Yomi Shir and you could do that, but, you know, I don't know if yeshiva guys really do that. And, you know, maybe they will. If you can't learn, what are you going to do? I mean, it's a frustrating state to want to learn and not be able to learn. It's very frustrating. That's probably, I want to talk about this. That's probably one reason why we don't learn. Why we just sit in our room and don't learn, and, you know, because it's hard and it's frustrating. But if we can't do it now when we're in yeshiva, we're not going to be able to do it after a long day at work when our wife wants us to let our kids in or whatever, and it's just not going to happen. We just got to. But if we could figure out how to do it, and it's painful. It's painful and it's hard. It's hard to learn how to learn. There's certain. Because, like, to do anything, to learn how to play basketball is painful. You just don't know how to do it. It's hard. It's, you know, you keep missing or whatever. Like, learning anything, it just, you got to become an expert. And we can talk about why it's hard, but it's hard. The bottom line is at the beginning, there are pleasurable parts of it, but there are also hard parts of it. And it's not, it's kind of the thing, you have to kind of fight through that and learn how to do it. Because if you know how to do it, your life will be a different life. You know, it's, you lend yourself to having a life where you could really have the satisfaction of Talmud Torah. But if you don't learn how to do that, then it's different. Not saying, you know, not saying you don't have anything, but it's hard. You're putting yourself in a harder situation to be able to really have Torah's the Kabbalah. Look, you could still have it, and look, you could learn Chumash Rashi, and there's whatever. I'm not saying there's nothing else in Torah. There is, you know, there's other, you know, there's other things, but I think if you're capable of that, I think that's really ultimately where it's at. You know, that's the kind of thing you could always do. Okay, so let's question.
Yeah. So do you think this is really two separate things that we have to take up of how to get yourself to face the challenges of the training part of learning and how to face the challenges once learning is you know a bit of a less painful process than how to get yourself to learn when it's at that point?
There could be related. Could be related. I mean, there's definitely overlap between those two questions, but yeah, I'm not sure.
It seems like it is a much different thing to it just feels different if you when you have to make the decision: should I watch TV or should I learn through the sukkah, not knowing how to read and not knowing how to do anything, than if you know how to read and if you know how to
Well, I think there's one particular difficulty which you're not going to have, which is that I can't do it. You know, because if we go through the different difficulties in sitting and down and learning and, you know, getting away from TV, then some of them won't apply to someone who already knows how to learn. You know, some of them will, you know, the other ones will. So that's why there'll be some overlap. You know, it's one less hurdle, but it doesn't quite make the problem go away, right? You know, so. You know, I think it will be part of a larger discussion. So, if we have to analyze this thing, why can't we just turn off the TV or whatever it is? So, yeah, let's use that as an example. You know, get off the internet and just sit and learn. Why can't we do that? So how do we analyze that? Like, how, just in terms of an approach, how should we approach that? And we could just kind of come up with... we could just list a bunch of answers. But I think there's like a good one.
Seems like there has to be, like, when you're confronted with that decision, there has to be some type of cost-benefit analysis that goes through your head, okay, whether it's thorough or whether it's, like, intuitive or just, like, instantaneous. And I think, like, pinning that down and really, like, seeing what exactly are the costs and benefits.
Okay.
You know, and if our analysis comes out different than the gut reaction, then, like, what accounts for that difference?
Right.
You know? Like, why can't we see it clearly?
Right. Okay, good. Okay, so it seems to me is like just to set up the one basic framework here is that it seems there's two variables here. Okay, two variables, which is learning and doing other stuff. Okay,
yeah.
And we have to separate them. One is why aren't we learning, right? And why are we doing this other stuff, right? I mean, I think those are both part of because we're choosing A over B, right? So we have to learning should be awesome, and we should be just going for it. So it must be that we have some sort of resistances or problems with learning. The internet should just be whatever. TV should just be whatever, but somehow we're drawn towards it, right? Something is drawing us in some sort of a compulsive manner, which it would be nice to be able to uncover what that is. So there's we're being strongly drawn towards one thing and not, you know, and repelling or resisting learning. So it seems to be that in this figuring out what's going on here, it seems to be a totally different discussions. I mean, there's an overlap here, but there are two things we have to uncover: the difficulties and the problems and the resistances to learning, and then on the other hand, the attractions of all these. Just why is sitting around doing nothing so attractive? And so, you know, why can't we just get off and just do something? Right? That, those are different discussions, right? Right, like for instance, if a person was saying is that I can't study because I'm sitting on the internet, then we'd be studying, well, the internet thing is the same thing, but then you have to figure out why isn't he value studying enough or whatever. But yeah, we're not just going to study, we're studying Torah. You know, so presumably, or at least it's possible that there could be, but it could be it's only one. Maybe we value learning appropriately, but the internet is too strong, you know? But maybe there's both. Maybe we have problems with Torah and also we have, draws towards this other stuff. You with me? Okay, so I guess we should take one at a time. Right? Anyone want to start with any with one or the other? Yeah.
Well, I mean, an example of resistance is for learning, I think we've talked. It's kind of.
So, are we going to start with that?
Sure.
Any objections? I mean, I don't think it really matters. I don't know, whatever. I just want to, you know. Right, why don't we learn? So I guess that's our question. Why is it that if we appreciate the idea of Darsal Kevel, I'll just formulate the question. If we appreciate the idea of the enjoyment of learning or the value of learning, you know, the importance of learning, so what's somehow it's hard to do. Right? Somehow it's hard to do. Right? So what's the problems? What are the resistance to it? Of course, one answer, we just don't appreciate that idea. So I think that's Johnny's point. We got to think into, that's why I think the proof of learning is a very important part of this thing, because you have to be convinced that this is something which is enjoyable, something you want to do, something which is, you know, on an intellectual level. You have to see that idea. So if you don't see those ideas, then that's, I'm not going into that tonight, but it's certainly, that's like kind of the, I'm assuming that. Okay, I'm assuming that's the given, that we see that, but still we have a problem. Okay, but, so that's the given here. We're assuming that we see the value of Torah on an abstract level. We see the fact that we want that to be our life. Somehow we still have a lot of resistance towards doing it.
Isn't it even stranger than that? Because let's say you're not even convinced of that idea,
yes.
Right? I think most people here would probably agree that they have had occasion in their lives to really just find themselves enjoying a learning experience.
Yes.
Right? So normally when you find an experience that you enjoy, you don't have to exercise any will to engage in that experience again.
Right.
The fact that you enjoyed it last time is generally enough.
Right.
Right, so even if a person isn't convinced on any sort of abstract intellectual plane of why this is a better life or anything like that, just the fact that you recall having enjoyable learning experiences.
Right, that's true.
So if this were the same as any other pleasure, that should be enough.
Right.
And yet, for whatever reason,
it's
just not.
That's
right?
True.
Like
that's true.
I have to go through, I mean, not to get into the other track, but just as a comparison, if you saw a TV show for the first time that you really liked, you don't have to go through a whole process of pulling yourself into that again.
Right.
Like, it's just not like, that was fine.
Right.
Let's do that again.
Right.
That's
true. That's a good point. And presumably we've all had very enjoyable learning experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's also a premise of this year here. I mean, if someone hasn't enjoyed learning, then one has to have a whole different discussion, right? But I'm assuming that we all have had these experiences which are very enjoyable, and we kind of could see the idea that would be great if we could just have this. You know, there's a lot of frustrations in life, but learning is just kind of cool, right? It's fun and it's pretty, you know, no stress really. I mean, stress, the more you know how to learn, the less stress there is. I mean, I agree, there is stress in learning insofar as you're not good at it, it's hard. It's very hard. But, you know, so assuming we've had these positive experiences, you'd think we just want to do it, but we don't for some reason. Okay, but I cut off Yona. I'm sorry. Daniel, I'll get to you in a second, okay? But Yona, so you were going to say?
I was just going to say that depending on where people are at, but like for me, it has to do with the language itself.
Yes.
So it's like learning how to read. I recall when I was 4 or 5, something around that age, I'd always want my mom to read.
Right.
It wasn't until my brother said, look, Yona, you know, when you read this, the world will open up for you.
Right.
Learn how to read.
Mm-hmm.
So my faith in him allowed me to, you know, plug through it and, you know, suddenly you know how to read. Now I can read all the stories of myself and life is great.
Right.
But we're similar to going on the bike. You're going to fall off and scrape it 50 times before you get, you know, 100 feet without the training wheels and without your parent right next to you and the handlebars.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So you're saying is that learning, although in theory learning is enjoyable, and when we go to a shir and the Rebbe reads it for us and tells us all the facts and just tells us as far as, you know, or whatever, we get involved in the discussion, it's great, but their practice, just to be able to do it is hard. There's the language and there's the reading of the Gemara and there's the kind of learning how, the practical skills involved in being able to do it, which could be challenging. It's hard. It's not easy. And it can be tedious. And it's not, sometimes it's enjoyable to try to work on that. There's a certain amount of enjoyment in it, but there's a certain amount of pain in that. Okay, good.
That also, I think, brings out a larger point, is that when you're drawn to do activities, there's usually one or two considerations at play. Either just enjoyment,
mm-hmm.
right, or some knowledge of responsibility, that I should be doing this or I need to be doing this for some other goals. Right? So with learning, it seems like you really have both elements. Right? You could find yourself in the mood to learn, and that happens also.
Nah.
Right? Maybe rare, but that can happen also, and then you are just motivated. There is no struggle in that instance. You just do it. But generally, when we learn because we recognize that this is a value, and even if this isn't what I'm in the mood for, I should anyways, or whatever. Uh-huh. Right? So, that seems like when you're faced with this scenario you just described, that, well, there's a lot of tedium involved. So if the way you're used to making decisions about what to do right now is, well, what's enjoyable, so then why would you ever pick a tedium?
Right.
That's just, so if that's going back to the idea of just sitting around and enjoying yourself, if that is, if that's your kava, so then learning will never fit into that.
Right.
And now the only way you're going to be able to introduce it is by introducing a whole new framework of, well, you should be doing this. There's this responsibility idea. That's a foreign that's a foreign consideration.
Right. Okay. Okay, so maybe just to draw this point out. I mean, I think there's a deeper point. I think this point that it's hard. First of all, hard to learn could mean language. It could mean skills. It could be svaras. I mean, on many levels. I mean, until a person really doesn't feel, you know, the difficulty, like it really takes a long time until you really know how to learn, and you don't feel like uncomfortable. I don't know how to do this. This is hard. Like even svaras. I mean, until you really know how to get svaras, it's very, you have that feeling. Again, language is the most basic thing because it's just, you don't even get anywhere, right? I mean, if you can't read it, right, it's just really basic. But I mean, you know, on any level, I think a person feels frustrations that they just, you know, yeah. I think, and maybe I'll mention this point now, is I think that there's the practical difficulties, the fact that it's hard. And we don't like doing hard things. We like doing easy things. Right? It's easy to surf the internet. It's easy to watch a movie on TV, right? There's no real pain. It's just, right? Whatever. We'll get into that. But it's hard to do. I think there's a deeper psychological point, is that we feel very uncomfortable when we don't know how to do something. Okay? We like to be masters and to be experts at doing stuff. And to do something that we're not good at is very painful, not just because it's tedious and it's hard, but it makes us feel like we're weak. It makes us feel like we're losers. It makes us feel like we don't, this is important, but I just don't know how to do it. So that I think is more important than the, deeper than the practical difficulties involved in doing it, in learning, and being able to break your teeth and work out, you know, learn how to do it. There's a certain feeling of incompetence. Like, I'm just not good enough, type, you know, which is a deep, you know, is a strong resistance to being able to learn. Because, again, we don't like to do things that make us, that we're not good at. You know, like, I have friends, I have gone skiing a few times, and I just never picked it up. For whatever reason, I'm pretty athletic, I just, whenever I go skiing, I just can't stop.
So you really like
not
it.
Not a good way.
Yeah, so I kind of just start picking up speed, and then I just fall to the side. Because, you know? And I don't want to go skiing. And Elise asked me, why don't we bring the kids skiing? I'm like, no. I don't want to. You know, it's dangerous. I have all these. For me, it's dangerous, I'll tell you that. You know? But the point is like, like when I just think about skiing, it's uncomfortable for me because I don't know. Like I don't know why. I just can't get it, and it's I don't like doing things that I can't do. And I feel like I like to feel like I'm an athletic, talented guy in these kinds of things, and I just stink at skiing. I don't know why, for whatever reason. But I don't want to go near the ski slopes. I'm just not interested. I don't want to bring my kids skiing. I don't want them to be interested in this whole thing. This is just not where life is at, obviously.
Very deep psychology. Yeah.
You know, it's a waste of time. You know, but the point is that if you're not good at learning, on any level, if you're not good at reading, if you're not good at getting pshat in the Gemara, if you're not good at giving svaras, you know, even if you hear svaras, that, you know, you kind of can't get it. You just kind of hear people more advanced than you giving svaras, and you just, I don't know, you just kind of feel incompetent when you hear it. You know, there's a lot of state points in learning where you kind of feel just not good enough, and you know, you're a smart guy, but I don't know, for some reason I just can't get it. Or there's a long way till you kind of could feel at comfortable with yourself and being able to learn. And that's a strong resistance to being able to learn. Besides just, again, I think you could fight through, if it was only just the practical difficulties, I think you could fight through it, because you know you could get it, and you could work through it, and you know, whatever. But there's a psychological pain, an emotional, an ego pain, that stops us from doing it, you know? It's easy to surf the internet, and I'm good at that. but I'm not that good at learning, and I don't like to do things that I'm not good at. And it's going to take me a long time and work and pain of being weak and unable to do it till I could finally reap the benefits. And until you get to that point, there is that psychological and emotional frustration daily. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in learning, but, you know, if you don't get a svara, if you're a business teacher, you don't get a svara, you just don't get it. What's he doing? That's painful, man. But that's, you know, besides for the fact that you don't get it, you kind of feel like, you know, do you know how to learn? Like, I know, I go to Rebbe Shul, I don't know, you guys, you know, it's a Rebbe Shul type of thing. But, like, sometimes you just don't get what he's saying. Like, I don't know, that's not a comfortable feeling, you know? You know Rebbe knows how to learn, but I don't know. I thought I knew how to learn until I heard Rebbe giving svaras, and I don't get them. So that's emotionally painful. You don't want to, you know? So you kind of have to, you know, part of the, that's, I think, it's a deeper point than just the practical difficulties, and I think it's something we have to fight through. Because, you know, look, if I don't ski because it makes me emotionally pain, you know, it hurts my ego to go to the ski slopes, and I just won't go to ski slopes, big deal. But if I don't learn because I can't get over that, and then I end up never learning, then that, what a shame that would be, you know. So we have to be able to fight through this thing, because otherwise, you know, it's gonna hinder us. What? It's an act of will. I mean, look, there are other points we're gonna discuss, but that you gotta. Well, I think one thing is realizing that sometimes. That's why I think sometimes just realizing the cycle, the conflicts and the difficulties, what the resistances are. I mean, that's like psychoanalysis, right? But it's not on a basic level. Just realizing what the resistances are, realizing it's stupid. What am I gonna do? I'm not gonna learn. I'm not gonna get. By not learning, I'm just the same guy with the same weakness that I have anyways. You could ignore skiing. I could really stay away from the slopes. But your whole life, you're going to realize that you don't know how to learn. You can't... You're a Torah Jew. You're a person, you know. You'll always know that your weaknesses. You have to face it on a daily basis. It's the kind of thing, it's not going away. So if you can't do it, and whatever difficulties you have, it's going to plague you. So you got to realize you could run away from it, and it doesn't work. So you got to just... You know, as best as you could, you got to kind of fight through. Realize that it's silly. Realize it's not really a reason not to go skiing. I mean, look, skiing, I don't really care. Why should I be skiing? So who cares? But, you know, if it was something important, like, you know, if it was a job or whatever it is, or school or whatever it is, you just got to do it. I mean, if it's important, it's important. Yeah, someone was going to say? Yeah, John.
I don't know if this is the same problem or if it's just like kind of a parallel problem, but for me at least, another big thing is no matter how hard I try to stop myself, then I always end up like comparing myself to other people.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
And like if I'm having trouble kind of with svara, another person gets svara, then I wonder like what's wrong with me? This person, you know, and like, you know, over
right.
the course of time, thinking that like if I see someone, you know, advancing and becoming, you know, becoming better at learning,
right.
and I don't feel that, then mm-hmm. then you know.
And
you go learn the same way.
Yes. Yeah, true. I think the parallel. I mean, that's good. That's true. That's a good point, because even if you do know how to learn and you feel like you are growing, there's always going to be someone who's better than you. You know, almost always. You know, I guess there's one guy now, but there's always, I mean, you know, it just has to happen. I don't know. Better than you in something. It just, you know, in life, it's important in life in general. Yeah, you got to drop that relative way of evaluating ourselves. You know, but that's all part of the ego thing, right?
Right, and
sure.
Along with that, I find that for me, there's another thing which comes along with that, which is that once I start comparing myself to other people, it's very easy to justify not getting involved because,
right.
since I don't want to think that I really am inferior,
right.
so it must be that guy's just made of different stuff.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? So, oh, for him, it's just automatic, so whatever.
Right.
He didn't have to try, that's why he can do it. I would have to do so much work to do that.
Right.
It's not worth it. It's
right.
impossible. No one could ever do that. It's only
right.
because he's so smart that he can do that.
Right. Right. And then somehow you just escape the whole...
right. It's a justification to not do
TV.
Yeah, right. No, that's true. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's hard because we live in a world, a relative world, and you kind of have to... I mean, I think that's an important point. I didn't mention this also, but like, not only is Torah Lekeva not a matter of how much time you're learning. I mean, it could involve that, but it's not essentially that. It also isn't a measure of like how good you are at learning. You don't have Torah Lekeva doesn't mean that you're a genius and you're a lamed and you're a gadol hador. I mean, not every guy who's Torah Lekeva is the same mind as another guy that starts the Kefa. I mean, there are different people with different minds, different abilities, different strengths, different weaknesses, and you can be towards the Kaaba. Just because another guy is smarter than you and he'll be able to learn better than you, it doesn't mean that you can't be towards the Kaaba. And it doesn't mean to be towards the Kaaba you have to be that brilliant guy. Towards the Kaaba could be just to learn at your level. Yeah, and you could learn a Gemara, you could learn a Rashi, you could learn a Chumash and Rashi, you could have a love of the learning that you do on your level. So yeah, for sure, it's like you gotta avoid that. I mean, it's true, that's bad, because that hinders you. I mean, you gotta look at yourself. It's a bigger discussion, I mean, for sure. But I mean, in learning, it's especially true because everyone's mind is different, and you know, there are a lot of smart guys around. There's always a, you know. And it's important not to feel, yeah, like that's I think what it says in Aram where I say, Lo lacham lacha ligmar. It's not on you to finish. You're not going for some like goal of being caliber blank of learning. You gotta kind of do small steps and you gotta kind of work towards getting yourself more better at it and more involved in it and, you know, attaching yourself to what you could attain. But that's the ego thing. I mean, that's the ego thing. The ego's satisfied by comparing yourself to other people. I mean, that's just an easy way to get, you know, if you're better than other people and you could get a better score than them, then you feel like, you know, you feel strong. And if not, then you feel weak. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I was talking about, and there are two levels. I mean, there's the comparing yourself with an objective, I don't know, I don't learn. And then there's where I said, even if you do not learn, there's the other guy. So that's important to identify also. Yeah, I guess the main step is just realize that. Realize that and kind of as best as possible reflect on the fact that let's say he were dead. So to speak. I mean, let's say he weren't around. I mean, what does that have anything to do with you? I mean, it's the sort of thing like he didn't have to be in yeshiva, that guy. So let's say he wasn't. Right? Then you would have been great. And now because he happens to be here, then you're not. Like, he has nothing to do with you. I mean, you're you. He's a... Right, I mean, that's the way I think of these relative things. It's just, I'm me, and what he is nothing to do with it. Pretend he wasn't there. So I can't be a lesser person because he happens to be in the yeshiva. I mean, if I never bump into him, then I'd be okay. But now, you know, so you got to realize that doesn't really make any sense. You got to kind of judge yourself on an objective level and just kind of on your own playing field and forget about the other guys.
But it does bring your shortcomings to the forefront.
It does, no, for sure. Emotionally, it does. It brings your shortcomings to the forefront. For sure. But I think that's the only thing I would say is like that stops us from learning, our shortcomings. And that's, I guess, the point is that not just the practical difficulties in learning, but we blame it on that. We blame it on it's too hard, I can't do it, whatever. But I think your shortcomings is what really bothers you. And that's like when something reminds you of your shortcomings, it's very hard to do it. There's a lot of resistance to doing it because you know that you're going to do it and you're going to feel weak and you're going to feel whatever, you know? So. Yeah, I kind of pick, but that's the way to get around that. I mean, look, you have shortcomings, you got to face up to that, but you got to kind of work through it and you overcome those. You know, ultimately, it's a slow process, but you do. I mean, by learning, you get better at learning. It's just the way it works. You know, you'll slowly get better. I mean, are you going to become perfect and remove all your shortcomings? No, but you know, that's life. You have shortcomings, you got to kind of face them. But it's important to realize the sources of anxiety. I mean, it's an important part of overcoming the struggle to identify why we don't want to learn. You know, what is stopping us from learning?
I was going to say that the point that Rini was saying about taking guys and different stuff, that being something that takes you away from learning, for me, then that's something which actually kind of breaks this emotional comparison because. Since everyone is really made of different
right.
stuff, then why are you comparing yourself to them?
Right, that's a good point. Right. I mean, it's true. I mean, that's what I mean. He's telling me he has his mind, I have my mind, whatever. Okay, so what was your point? So why is that hard that knock you down? I mean, you say he's doing different stuff and I can never do it. Like, he could do it, I can never do it. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like it defeats you.
Right.
Yeah, but Johnny's saying is you could use that to your benefit also. He'll say, look, he's made different stuff. He's his own guy. Let him do his thing. He'll rise up to whatever. But, like, I'm me. I'm made of my stuff. And look, whatever. I got to just deal with it, you know? Like, if we're all made of the same stuff, then, yeah, then it's a little bit more painful that I can't do it. But if he's different, he's his own mind, so.
Right.
One of the greatest things that helped me move forward in my learning was all of a sudden realizing the fact I am not Yaakov Trachman. You know? Like, once I was able to accept that, then, like, and, like, you know, then I was able to, like, move on, you know?
Yeah, me too.
Sure. It's true. These are, I mean, but you're talking for real, right?
Yeah.
No, that's important. I mean, that's how these things could really make a difference. I mean, I think, you know, that's why I think there are a lot of points here, and that's why hopefully we'll get to different points. Different people are moved by different things, so I don't know if everyone is, a traveling experience, but it may be someone else, or maybe a different point. But, I mean, the uncovering resistances, break through some sort of realizing the resistance, oftentimes can help us break through it, and deal with it and overcome it. Yeah, okay. What else? Yeah. What's that?
Someone else.
What's that?
Matt's on.
Oh, Matt. Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, like, I feel like a related difficulty is that, like, I feel like we often think that the extent to which a person, like, succeeds in learning is, like, tied to how smart he is. So, like, when you have difficulty learning, it's, like, you're being told that you're not smart. And
right.
I think for a lot of us, like,
right.
Smartness is like an important part of our identity and stuff, and it's like all the more painful
right.
to hear that, like,
right.
something that's important to you, you're like, you don't have that, you know?
Sure.
Like by skiing or something like
right.
that. Like,
I mean, who cares? Like, I can get by.
It's telling you that you're not an athletic person.
Right.
Like, it's not that hard. Or
right.
for some people, I guess, like,
right.
you could just think, like, oh, well, athleticism isn't that important to me.
Right,
it's not
right.
really a big part of my identity. But,
right.
like,
right.
by
no,
something
it's
like running,
time.
It's tied to your intelligence. Like, and you consider your intelligence to be something that's important to you.
It's true.
And it becomes all the more painful.
It's true. For sure. For sure. Especially in our yeshiva. I mean, I think intelligence is like, you know, it's a big contest of the smartest guy. So that's what we value. Right? That's what we value. And Torah, I mean, the certain Torah values Chachma. But so it kind of, we've been, you know, given that we're all pretty smart kind of thing, you know. So it's how we measure ourselves and how we identify ourselves, and if we can't do it, we feel like an idiot, and that's you know, we're harsh on ourselves, and it's discouraging and depressing. And there's an easy way to avoid it: is just watch TV, or I don't know, do something else. Do something that doesn't remind us of these things. You know, it just brings to mind these conflicts, and it's just easy to just ignore it. So, what are we doing that's so great? I don't know, just sitting around. But it's better than that, because that's painful, and that makes me realize that I'm not as smart as I want, as I think I am. So I'll just ignore that, and I'll just do things that allow me to think that I'm smart. But, you know, the joke's on you, because, you know, it's not, you know, you're harming yourself. I mean, that's what you got to realize, these things. These things are silly, but they don't really, you know, they affect your long-term goals. That's what you got to realize. So you have to, it takes two things. You got to think into what your long-term goals are, and that's kind of what you're saying, to think into Doros HaKavan, to think, what do you see yourself as in 10 years or 20 years? Like, how do you see your life? How do you see your midlife crisis being going, you know? Like, what do you see your identity as being? And how do you feel coping with life's challenges? And then realize, okay, fine, now how do I, you know, what difficulties are stopping me? What's preventing me? What are these subtle psychological things that are preventing me from being able to be where I want to be? You got to you know, I don't think it's only just getting that idea clear. Because you gotta have that idea clear, but bottom line is, I feel like an idiot when I try to learn, and I'm never gonna do it because I have like a block, you know. So it's clear as day, but I just can't do it. I just can't do it. Whenever I try to learn, I always end up on the internet, you know. I try to learn via my computer, and then I'm on the internet, whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, then I'm texting them this, then I'm that. I'm always doing other things because I just can't do it because there's a block. So if you don't realize these resistances, you may have the idea clear, but you don't have these other ideas clear. So there's a lot of things that could take you away from something, even if you see it to be clear. So you got to break those things down also.
I think another solution to this is, and like, it's like, there's one of those things like a passion that could just be not available to you, but if depending on how much time you have to train and learning, then you could get past a lot of this difficulty by just not challenging yourself so much. You know, like if you're a person who gets really frustrated and feels really incompetent when you're trying to get through a Tosfos, then just learn Gemara Rashi and find that, you know.
Right. That's true. I mean, if you try too hard, I mean, you take things that are beyond your reach, then...
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, I know that that's a good idea, is like when you're trying to... whenever you're learning, if you set up a chavrus and you're learning, I think it's important to take problems that are within your reach. Like, I've had this experience of spending way too long on a problem and then just getting really frustrated and giving up. Like, there's especially, I mean, for anyone in learning. I mean, I give up on sugya, certain sugya, just I just can't get it. You spend too long and you're not getting it. You're not getting it. Look, not, you know, that's just the way it is, you know. But like, especially when you're just learning how to learn, there are, you gotta just take what you can get, you know. Like, you can't give up on every single idea, because then you're never gonna do anything, you know. But work on a problem, try to get somewhere, and then if it gets really frustrating, then move on. You just can't get it, and you'll make a different idea. Certainly, there's such a thing as easier as far as an art, as far as an easier things to work out and harder things to work out. So yeah, don't force yourself into things. Don't try to do a huge TOSUS that you're just not going to be able to figure out, and it's too hard, and it's going to, you know, if you feel like it's a particular thing is causing you too much pain, then, you know, but you can't do that in everything, obviously. But, you know, you can be selective about it. Be selective about it. Try to maximize your positive experiences in learning and minimize the negative ones. Especially as, you know, as you get better, you'll be able to deal with, you know, there's nothing wrong with just giving up on a Svara. Saying, I don't know, I can't get this one. And I'll move on to the next one. You know, you don't feel like, just because, you know, in Shira, the Rebbe does every Svara, so I have to do every Svara, you know. Some things are, you know, pick the ones, you know, even if you just learn through a Daf of Gemara, you know, an Amud of Gemara, get some skills, pick a problem that seems manageable to you and work on that. You know, you don't have to do every single one, you have to do every single thing. To find the easy ones, to find the machlokas, don't have to try to pull out questions, and, you know. For sure. I mean, you could try to make the experience, and that's what I think could be good for art school, depending on where you're at in learning. Is you gotta kind of, you wanna have positive learning experiences. You know, you gotta start getting, you know, you wanna start enjoying learning. And, you know, in art school, it could be, you know, again, you wanna learn how to learn without it. But at the same time, if, you know, if you really can't read, it's gonna be very painful. So art school can help you get the pshat. Get the pshat, and then you can work on the spot.
Actually, I had that exact experience with art school someone told me in high school that I should, like, the only way to learn how to make a leading is to just take a Gemara and take an art scroll, or take a Jastro, and just do a daf a day or something like that. And after the first day, I stopped, because even though I really did want to learn how to make a leading,
it was too much, right? I think you can only do that in Israel. Somehow you could do that. There in Israel, you could do that. I mean, like, certain guys can do it at any time, but it's, the internet show is very helpful to be able to just, you know, torture yourself. And, I don't know, somehow it works. Somehow it's like, that's part of the, you know, I don't know, it's like there's enough emotions getting you to learn, and the situation, and everyone's doing it, and whatever, that you can do it. But, you know, like in high school, who's in high school is going to be able to sit down for 2 hours or do a daf a day or breaking their teeth on it? It's too much pain. It's just, you know, look, a guy could do it, kol hakavod, great. You know, I'm not saying, but yeah, for sure. Like a guy, there's a balance. On the one hand, you want to learn how to learn, and if you're just reading art school all day long, but, you know, at the same time, you could use art school as a tool that could help you and work your way off of it and learn. I mean, ultimately, you want to learn how to read, you know, independent of art school. There's no art school on Rashi, and there's art school, you know, got to learn. But at the meantime, in early stages, I don't see anything wrong with, you know, using that as a crutch to be able to help you have positive learning experiences. The essence of learning isn't in the getting the pshat, although you needed to do it. You needed to do that. You need to be able to do that. But at the same time, you also want to be able to have some enjoyable learning experiences. And for guys who don't know how to, if you don't know how to learn pshat, and you also don't know as far as, you don't do anything, like, you want to have experiences in svaras. And if you're not going to use the art school, you're never going to get anywhere in learning. So you could use it just to be able to get some shot, you know, also work on laning, and, you know, even if you read art school, you don't have to necessarily read it in English. You could try to read it in the room and look over. It could be like a sophisticated gesture, you know?
Yeah, I heard what Tim used to do was he used to look at the English until he could read it through without looking at the English, and, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I said that. He told me that he didn't see that. I think I probably told you he said he did that, but I just said, yeah, what you used to do. He's like, no, I didn't. So I made that up. You know? What he used to just read he used to use it as like a gesture, and he couldn't figure out. He'd just stay on the Hebrew side, but when he couldn't figure it out, then he'd go to the
That worked out so well for me, like, all the time that was been wasted on the gesture.
Yeah. But like he did, but the point is, like, if you just stay on the English side, then you're not.
Right, that,
but do the Hebrew side, but work on it. Try to work it out. But certainly you get stuck. So you get stuck. Look there, figure out what it is, and then go back and then try to get, you know, as much as you could do on the Hebrew side, you'll do it. But just don't frustrate yourself too much. Too much pain, you're just gonna end up dropping it, unless you know that you can handle it. But, you know, you don't want to set up a learning some sort of seder or some sort of learning you're gonna drop. That's the point, yeah, and that's part of the original point. You got to make a plan that's reasonable for you. You got to make some sort of a practical plan that you're going to be able to keep up. Because to set up a chavrusa and then cancel it the next day or in a week, you're not getting anywhere. You got to kind of think it through and make a plan that's reasonable for you to keep and stick to it. And don't just give up when it's a little bit hard, because then, it's not a way to live life. Yeah, Judah? Oh, you were telling me that man had something to say.
I had something also, just a category of obstacles that is probably different for everyone. I'm always surprised that certain things that come from our school experiences taint certain areas of learning.
Right.
Like when I was in yeshiva, then I noticed that at a certain point in the year, I would just get sick of the fact of the being obligated to come to Seder and, and be there every day. And if you miss one, you have to catch up, Whereas, let's say, whenever I go home for the summer, and learning would be totally, free, and I set my own schedule, it'd be, pleasure. The fact that there's no obligation would make it better,
Right.
So a certain, that's
right.
Totally an emotional thing, that associations that you have, with obligations.
No, that's true. That's like a super ego pressure to learn that we have from being kids.
Right.
We have a tendency to rebel against that.
Yeah.
We don't want to be told what to do. We don't want our Rebbe or our teacher or our parent or whatever telling us what to do. So even though learning may actually be fun, but we just have all these associations to someone there telling us to do it. And I'm not going to do what he tells me to do.
Right. And I think because it's a super ego thing, sometimes all it takes is just sometimes you can work it out in the situation and just tricking. Finding a way to trick your psyche into not having that feeling being awakened, and then you can solve it. But sometimes it's deeper than that.
Right, that's true. You mean the summer is a good type of a thing.
Yeah. Well, here's an example. I remember one time I wanted to set up a seder for learning the Mishnah Torah. So I tried doing a parak a day. So that didn't work. So what eventually ended up working was I made a rule for myself that after every tefillah I do either a parak a day or a half a parak. Or one halakha. And the fact that I gave myself the option, most days I ended up doing the prakim, but because I gave myself that little option of leeway, it didn't become an absolute obligation, and I didn't have that pressure,
Right, that's true, that's good. That's good. So the point is that the resistance is sometimes the resistance to learning is not in what learning, the actual current modern day experience of what learning is, which is fun, but it is our memories of learning and of people telling us to learn and all these types of psychological baggage which comes along with learning.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, it's true.
Well, certain students will get turned, in high school, will get turned off if they're learning from a sefer, but if you take the sentence you want to focus on and you blow it up into one page, then all the resistances are gone. They don't associate that with learning Chumash anymore.
Right.
It's just little tricks like that can work with emotions,
Right, I guess you gotta be aware of yourself. I mean, that's, I think, a personal thing.
Yeah.
You gotta be aware of your own, I guess, your rebellion against your superego that tells you to learn, And that could stop us from learning because we don't want to do what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta be aware of that. Again, it'd be a shame not to learn because you're rebelling against, some childish thing. That's, you got to kind of revise that and become assess now in terms of your modern term. What is learning? I'm not learning because someone's telling me to. I'm learning because I want it and because I enjoy it and it's a great thing. You kind of have to overcome that, which is, of course, not easy to do, but at least you could think through the positive experiences, positive reasons why you want to learn besides for just because I'm supposed to. Because we don't like doing what we're supposed to. Or that we do, we don't. So there's all kinds of emotions in that. Complicated. Yeah, okay, what else? Yes?
I think there's another side of the ego thing, but a lot of times it's just hard to see any progress being made. So, day after day, either you're thinking it's something that even if you try to make yourself stop, then you find yourself doing you think about I didn't get a good start today, and I didn't get a good start yesterday, and then the next day I didn't get a good start, the only way to get out of that is to try to not focus on each day, but then either you can't do that, or doing that also makes the whole thing just feel pointless, because if I've forgotten, I'm trying to forget whether I make progress, why am I doing this? Yeah.
Right. But I think we should also focus on the good in the activity of learning itself. Like, it's not so much that I'm at a higher level of learning. Like, that, and that's an important thing. It's like, that's, so again, that's what you're saying. That's an ego thing also. It's not a matter of, the goal isn't to get to level 100. You know? That's not the goal. The goal is to be involved in learning. And to be enjoying the learning and to be attached to the learning is something that we hold dear and we value, and that's where our energy is. So even if we're not becoming, I don't know if that's the goal. We should be attached like our relationship to Torah, to the activity itself, and not to the what it does for us and makes us into a certain kind of an expert, or you know what I mean.
I think one of the things that a lot of times trips you up in especially our yeshiva is there's kind of the sense like there's a thing called the derech, and at some one day you're gonna you know read a gemara and you're just gonna have the derech, you know. And that's not true.
Or becoming a London.
Yeah,
like you get the T-shirt that says like I'm London.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, it's what you're saying about the levels, but if you realize that there really aren't any goals and there really aren't really any sweet levels,
Yeah, I think that self-assessment thing is overrated. You know, you feel like, what else? What am I doing? But what are you doing? You're learning. I mean, what else are you gonna do? You know, like, you're learning. This is where it's at, and you're putting energy into it. And look, you want to kind of feel like you're going. But so, what do you know? If you're not going, then what are you gonna do? Go and do something else. And this is a value. This is important. This is something which is enjoyable, and you're enjoying learning. If you're not enjoying it, you're not involved in it, not getting it, and whatever. But like, because you're not coming up with the idea, like that's. You're involving yourself in learning and whatever. I mean, look, I guess you want to know if you're doing something wrong, I guess. That's a practical value in assessing yourself. Like, am I not doing it right? Maybe I should do something else, but...
I think the other real concern is if you're not going to be able to learn independently after your time in yeshiva, then that's a big thing.
Sure, but what else are you going to do? So now, therefore what? So therefore... Like, how's it going to impact how you live? I mean, I guess if it will motivate you to learn more, and then, yeah, that would be great. But, like, what do you say? I'm not growing, and therefore, now what am I going to do? So, therefore, I'm going to stop learning, or therefore, I'm going to... What do you do differently? Mm-hmm. Unless there is something. I don't know, maybe I'm going to put... Yeah, if it means you're going to have to... I got to learn more. Because I'm not picking it up. If you realize, I'm just learning an hour a day, and I'm not really learning how to learn. I got to really... look into what my Rebbe's doing better, figure out the steps, prepare more, you know, then, yeah, I guess that would be good.
I mean, like we're talking about before, there are easier ways to learn and more difficult ways to learn, and even though the easier ways won't necessarily, produce the kind of results that you want ideally, I can see a person being discouraged enough by trying to crack his head at Gemara, and then just giving up hope that he's ever going to become a guy coming on Gemara, and just saying, okay, I'll go to Daf Yomi once a week, or I'll just spend my time listening to Shirim and stuff like that, and that'll be enough.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I hear you. I still think those is. And I think in general that's an ego type of a thing, and there's maybe a role of the assessment, but I think it should be, you try to, you know, that's part of the ego type of thing. I think in general, you should work on, assess how much energy you're putting into it, and if you're learning and you're putting energy into learning, and I think you'll be on a good path. You know, the mind naturally develops, and you'll grow as far as, you know, as long as you're devoting yourself to it and something that you put energy into it. Like in anything, I mean, that's just the way people go, you know. Unless they have something wrong with you, but I don't think you guys have something, you know. Okay, what else? Any other resistances to learning? Let's see. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is something we touched on, but I think it's important, which is that, this is one thing, I guess, two points here. One thing that we already mentioned is that for whatever reason, we don't have really an instinct of learning. I guess that's maybe goes to Rabbi's other Marisha and Shira, you know, but our energies naturally don't go to learning. Okay, they go towards taivas and towards physical, you know, other stuff. Right? The person doesn't just have a taiva to learn, like, in the same way. Like, you could know that it's good, you could realize it was enjoyable once upon a time and all that, but our energy just, it's just the way we are constructed, that our energy doesn't naturally go towards learning. Okay, our energy is going towards something else, and we have to extricate it from that other thing and learn. Okay? And that being the case, that's painful. And the idea of just stopping yourself from whatever else it is, whether it be the TV or something, or whatever, anything. It's just naturally your energy flows to other areas. And you have to, there is, I think, and maybe on some level of learning, like some really like Torah Lishma type of thing, the energy, I don't know, it just becomes, I don't really know. But I think on any normal level, at least that I'm aware of, it's like just, your emotions just get involved, you know, they go towards the world. And there's an it's short, it's not that much, but you gotta stop what you're doing. Just, you know, extricate your energy from whatever it becomes fixated on and devote it, you know, realize learning is good and I wanna do that. And it takes a certain, like, action, a force of will to do that. Just, it's a certain amount of pain. There's a pain of the removal of your energy from the thing. Stop that thing, and the thing where your emotions are going, your instincts naturally go, and to attach it to something which is long-sighted, it's a good thing, and you know, you can know that it's going to be good, but there's no instant, like, there's no instant draw on the thing, and there's no instant satisfaction. It's something you have to kind of see with your mind. So I think that's another problem with another resistance to learning, is that it's only a second. I mean, the second you shut that TV, it's over. Basically, you know, now you're ready to learn, but it's, I don't know, that moment is painful, and we kind of don't do that. What?
It's like getting out of bed.
It's like getting out of bed, exactly. Once you're out of bed, you're out of bed, and you feel it's, what do I need to do, sit in bed for 5 hours, whatever. But it's, you're right, it's like, you know, yeah.
I'm thinking, like, so far I've seen, like, there's, like, a pattern that we tend to gravitate towards things that have like less of a reward, but like it's a more immediate reward.
Yes.
Whereas learning is like obviously, you know, bigger reward, but it's just like way more prolonged.
Yes.
But if there was just like a way to sort of like look at these things like that are giving us these immediate pleasures, like TV and or whatever it is, email, whatever, and to like sort of show that they don't have a reward, or it's sort of like a like false reward.
Yes, right. You're right. That's the other side of the picture, which we have to get to.
Yeah.
Yes. No, that, I was going to say exactly that. Excellent point, Gil. That you're right. That there's the instant gratification. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for things that just will, even if it's not that much gratification, but like whatever on TV or whatever, there's a mild instantaneous pleasure at every moment that you're watching the TV or whatever it is. But in learning, it's not instantaneous. It takes a little bit of time, it takes a little bit of energy, and it takes a little bit of work. And where our emotions are look like instantaneous pleasure. They want that type of a satisfaction, and this is I think where it's a modern problem. I think is that, see, I know like when I was younger, and there's some of the guys who thought this, that you'll often get bored. There'd be such a thing. I don't know if kids nowadays get bored anymore. I'm not really sure, but they do. I don't know. Just like you do, you get bored. I don't know, but like with the internet, it's almost you could really not be bored because there's always just something to do, you know, and there's always shows, like even with TV, it used to be like you couldn't just watch something at any time of the day. I mean, if you were just home from school, like all that was on was like soap operas or something. Like you just were bored. There's nothing to do. Like you can't just even get anything. Like nowadays, there's always something, right? You can always watch something. You can always go on the internet and just surf whatever you're doing for an hour or two and somehow kill the time. But like you could be engaged always. And then when you get to do this, and then you go to your email, and then you go to the text, and then you go to Facebook, and then you go to Facebook. It's just, you could just constantly, you never get bored. So you could always be moderately engaged. You know? But like, boredom could be a good motivation to learn because if you're bored, just learn Torah. You'll never be bored. You could always just learn this. You could always. It's just like something you could always do. Like, why are you going to learn? Well, what else am I going to do? There's in a certain sense in life. I mean, why should one learn? What else are you going to do? I mean, learning is enjoyable. And what else? Other things just aren't as. Look, they have their moments, but it's just that could be a motivation to learn. It's something you could always do under all conditions, you know, and it's just there. But the fact that nowadays we look for, learning is a long term type of pleasure. It's something that it doesn't. The moment we start learning, our emotions aren't drawn to it, and you have to get into it a little bit. When we start learning, you notice at first it's not. It takes a little bit of time to get into the sugya till we start really. Our minds have to get involved, and that takes until that happens. It takes a few minutes, so it doesn't. You know, we're not. We want something much quicker than that. So if we have it, and there's so many things like that nowadays, it's just readily available for us. So now it's that much harder to be able to extricate ourselves from those things. I have to turn down the pleasure that's the momentary, small, but still, right there, that's impressing itself upon me. And I have to say, that's small and short term. It's not really going to make me happy, but this is something that's going to be painful for a little bit, but once I get into it, you know, that's great. And so when you finish learning, it's great. But like, you know, if you forget the first few minutes, are a little bit, you know.
So what do you do about that? I mean, one thing to just say that, but like.
Right now. Well, one thing is, I remember everyone says that there's a Chazal that says they used to start shiur with a joke. Most of it did the chusa. Because it's like, I think he said it's because that's gets yourself into the learning. There's an initial resistance to the learning, so you start off with a joke and your emotions get involved and then you kind of could do it. But like, I think what could we do? That's one thing, you know. But I think one thing you could do is, like, learning with the Chavrusa is a good thing. I mean, learning with the Chavrusa is a good thing. Because learning with the Chavrusa is like you get a friend who's your buddy, and it's fun. I mean, learning with the Chavrusas are fun. And, like, you're going to bottle some of the time, and it's fun. I mean, it's great hanging out with your friend. It's like, do it with a friend. You have a friend you like hanging out with, and you learn, and you talk, and you whatever. And it could be fun. It's like, yeah, just if you just imagine yourself just sitting down and, you know, sitting over by yourself over a Gemara for an hour, it's not, like, what's the prospects? It's not that exciting. But if you have a friend, then you get together with your friend and, you know, you're going to talk for a few minutes at the beginning and whatever, but then you end up learning. You have a Seder, you have something kavua, it's fixed. Just get yourself in, set up, and that's why I think part of the practical thing, set up a Seder with the Chavrusa who you like hanging out with and you think you could learn with. And, you know, you can end up talking some of the time, and that's going to be, you know, that's what I think, make learning have positive emotional benefits to it. And one of them could be social benefits. There's an idea, it's like instead of sitting alone, surfing the internet, sit with your friend and learn and hang out and whatever, and hopefully as you grow in learning you won't be battling as much. But like, it's always like, you know, pretty much like, you know, battle is part of learning. You end up just unfortunately just the way it is, but it's fun, you know. There's other things that could be part of learning. We can make jokes, you know, that's the idea. They start with a joke, so that's kind of the idea. It's like, so I think we should, it's great. I mean, you have great friends. I mean, your chavrusas should be your great friends. I mean, anyone who's had a good chavrusa, you know, the manager realizes that your great friends are your great chavrusas. And, you know, you talk in learning, you talk in ideas, you talk in joking around, you whatever. I mean, it could be a lot of positive. But ultimately, I mean, that's one practical thing. But there's a certain, ultimately still, there's a certain amount of pain of the extricating yourself, but just realize, think into how temporary that is. It's really, I mean, there's two things. There's the immediate shutting off the TV or just getting out of bed or whatever it is, and then there's like at the beginning of the learning. It just takes a few minutes until you kind of, you know, like you maybe sit down with your chavrusa and your bottle for a few minutes, and then you realize, okay, let's start. And then you start, and then like a minute into it, then you're into it, and then whatever. So, but I think you overestimate it. Your emotions overestimate the difficulty and the pain of the thing. It's really short term, you know. And learning the enjoyment is, you know, reflect back on your learning experiences and how enjoyable they were. And, you know, you got to kind of do that also. Realize, like what Gil was saying, is yeah, small, short, mild pleasure, short term, just doesn't compare it to long term, you know. Big pleasure, which is, you know, may take a few minutes till you could do, but you can get to go, you know, you get great stuff. In any area, you know, it's learning, but in any area of life, you know. There's a phrase like that, something, those who wait or something. Good things come to those that wait, yeah. Whatever.
I just thought it might be interesting to add something to it. There's a thing in decision theory and psychology called prospect theory.
Okay.
And the idea that we've just been discussing is called hyperbolic discounting, which
okay.
is to say that as time goes on, you Figure. Discount pleasure hyperbolically fast as opposed to exponentially fast. Meaning that people would rather get $1,000 a year for 10 years than $100,000 10 years from now.
Right.
Even though to get $100,000 10 years from now, you have to have a rate of return of like 50% or something.
Right.
So people would rather have a nice
$1,000. Right. Right. So I guess what we could do about that is that it's true. So we could just kind of analyze that and realize it doesn't really make sense in terms of our long-term pleasure, happiness, whatever, and kind of try to get ourselves out of a rut. I think the one practical step, I mean, we have to get more discussions, but the one practical step is Seder HaRusa. Just got to have a Seder. Got to have a HaRusa. Kvias every day, whatever, a few times a week, an hour and a half, whatever. You got to get like a Kvias going and learning. Where you're learning Gemara, I think. Learning how to learn. Learning, doing it. Just doing learning. And you'll get better at it with time. And if you don't have that, I think that's something you got to do, at least. On a minimal level. I think that's... But get a friend. Get someone who you think you'll really enjoy it with. You'll have a fun time with them. But because it could be fun. Learning is fun. And talking is fun. And the whole experience, But you got to set up a Seder. If you're making the decision, and this gets back to the original Mishnah point, if the time when you're deciding that you have to learn is when the TV is on, that's not the time to have the battle. Because you're not going to win that battle. It's too late. You got to make the decision now. You got to set, what does it mean now? Set up a chavrusa. Think into these things for sure, but set up siddurim, set things up. And don't just cancel them because, I'm too tired tonight, I'm not going to be able to make it. I have a lot of work. Whatever. You got to kind of commit yourself to the thing and realize that once you start canceling these things, they don't work out. So you got to make a plan, which I think the practical step is setting things up and make yourself responsible to your friend. You're responsible to each other. Don't let each other off the hook too easy. Don't just cancel the thing. Make it like a commitment. And I think that's one small step that goes a long way, I think, because it's that thing you'll be learning every day or whatever. And it feeds on itself. The more you do it, the more you'll be able to, But don't try to decide to learn while you're in front of the TV. It just doesn't work. That's the guy. That's the yichud situation or whatever. You got to set it up in advance. Yeah. Okay, I think that's... maybe there's other points. But we haven't really talked about the other side. Parenthetically we have. But about the draws of these other stuff. We're kind of been focusing on the resistances to learning side. So there are probably more, which we haven't come up with. But let's think about these, and let's try to think about, probably draws of these other stuff. Why is it that these other things are so attractive? Why are we doing them? They seem like so empty, but still, still we do them all the time. Okay, yes, go.
Because we haven't really internalized the reward that comes from learning.
That's true, but then on the other side, I'm saying that's true, and that's what we have to think about these points. There's the few points we have to think about. First of all, is this point that Chandrajani was making. Think about the real, you have to convince yourself of the reward of learning, the proof of learning, Torah, Seitros, Lekab, all those things. You have to think about these resistances to learning and try to overcome them. But I'm talking about a different thing. What is so enjoyable or so attractive about surfing the internet or Facebook or texting or email or... videos, all that stuff. They got to be fine. We don't appreciate learning, but still, what are we doing? How can we do that for so long? We're not doing anything. What is it? What's drawing us? So maybe if we gain a little insight into that, we'll also, that's another, forgetting about learning. Pretend you're a guy who's trying to study for a test, whatever. Still, you're wasting all your time with this. What's that? What is this? What's drawing us about it? Why are we so attracted to this? Why is everyone in the world doing this all day long? Must be some stuff. I don't think there's one answer. Presumably there are a number of things about it which are enjoyable. Or, why is there such an anxiety that we cannot do it? Right? Or try to sit down and not text or not do anything for a half hour. It's pretty hard, painful. Right? Why is that? Right? There's an anxiety about just not doing this stuff. Try to sit away from a computer and your phone and whatever. And just, do whatever for a half hour, But like, we're always fiddling with it every month. It's nonstop. But so what is that? It must be something there. after all, making everyone doing that. I mean, it's, everyone in the world is doing that stuff, you know. So it must be something going on. It's not that enjoyable, but somehow it's whatever, you know. Like, we understand food and sex, and like, what is this exactly? So I don't know. I'm not sure, but maybe we could try to pursue this. Okay, good. Any further questions? Okay, so again, if anyone has any other questions, feel free to contact me or email me any avenues that we can pursue. I mean, the goal here is, I think, to try to, you know, somehow make learning, you know, everyone's always trying to do this. I mean, assuming that we're trying to make Torah a more part of our lives, and the question is, how can we do it, you know? So what avenues should we pursue? You know, I don't really know. I'm kind of trying to figure this out, but... And this is, again, I think for everyone. I'm talking to, I think everyone in the room is at different places, but I think it's something that everyone's always involved in, you know? So, you know, different angles, different things that we should look into or think about, you know? Okay?
You want to have
Myra? Yeah, Myra.